Learning applied into leadership is a ripple effect that can help change the world for good. Welcome to the podcast, Small Things Make a Big Difference. My name is Spencer Holt. I get the opportunity to interview leaders all over the world and discover the small habits they do on a consistent basis that has made a big difference in their own lives and the many people that they interact with. To learn more about what I do at Global Leader Group, listen at the end of this episode. But for now, let's jump into this week's topic, and may we all be more intentional in who we're becoming and the impact we can have with others. This week on Small Things Make a Big Difference, we are in for a treat. My friend, Clark Maxwell. Clark is the former CEO of Chatham Financial, and I'm going to leave it till the end. You're going to have to wait till the end to see what he's going to do next. But Clark Maxwell, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Spencer. Happy to be here.
Well, so for those that aren't familiar with you, go ahead, give us a little background of who you are, a couple quick things of what you've done, and then we're going to dive into some other questions.
All right. That sounds great. I'll start with the best decision of my life, marrying my wife, Carrie Cooper. We met in high school about 5 years. We did not get married in high school, but about 5 years later, we're married. We have five wonderful kids. My oldest actually has three daughters, all under age two, twins and a newborn. So five kids, three grandkids. I'm an accounting nerd. I got my bachelor's and master's in accounting from BYU, Brigham Young University in Provo. And then from that point forward, I worked at the Financial Accounting Standards Board for a year, where I was introduced to derivatives and hedging. And that's what I did. And that sounds super boring, so we won't spend a lot of time on it. But these are instruments that companies use to manage interest rate risk, foreign currency risk, commodity price risk, swaps and options and futures and forwards. And again, I won't take you there, but that's been my whole career.
I'm nodding my head like I understand. Whatever you just said, it sounds interesting.
So I went to the FASB. I knew nothing about that. I went to Ernst & Young 4.5 years. Salt Lake City and New York City was where I worked. That's a horrible commute, by the way. 1 year I went back and forth between Salt Lake and New York. Never do that. And then 20 years I've been at Chatham Financial. The first 11 years I was on the accounting team. And in 2013, I was asked to be the chief operating officer. And then at the end of 2018, was asked to serve as the CEO. I did that until I recently resigned, just the end of March.
Oh my gosh. You'll say like, oh, I'm an accounting nerd. However, you know, as an accounting nerd, you are incredibly transformational in the way that you communicate with people and in the way that you don't get asked to be CEO of you. If you haven't heard of Chatham Financial, I encourage you to look them up because it's a super cool company that is employee owned, which is not normal as well. So maybe tell us a little bit about Chatham and the dynamics around leading a employee-owned company.
Yeah, you know, that's fascinating. Chatham was founded in 1991, so just over 30 years old. Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, but now it's a global firm. We have offices around the world, about 650 employees, and it's 100% employee-owned, which is an interesting dynamic. We have over 400 employee owners. And as you get bigger, that gets more and more challenging to not be public. And how do you manage the capital and the other equity, you know, transactions and structures? But it's a company that I really feel like was founded on the right values and a real ownership mentality. And I think that's the one thing you get at Chatham is feeling like an owner. Like, okay, if this were my business, what would I do? When I started at Chatham, there were just over 30 people. Today, there's about 650 people worldwide. So a lot of growth, still 100% employee owned. And we have over 3,000 clients. A lot of the biggest companies in the world use Chatham. It's very niche. It's very specialized. And again, I won't take you into the depths of the finance, but that's what Chatham does. And it's given us an opportunity to work with companies really across every industry, really heavy in real estate and private equity and banking, but general corporates and Fortune 500 and kind of a fascinating opportunity to see how companies work and get on the inside and think about how they manage risk. So it's fun to be small, but work with the biggest of the big.
So you became CEO, right? So I'd love to just let's talk about your leadership formula for a second, because when I see you, I'm like, you are a servant leader. You are amazingly kind. You, as busy as you are, you take time to serve others. So if you would articulate your leadership formula for everyone listening today.
That's a great question. I think I would say, now I'm a consultant as well. So probably everything for me goes on a 2x2 grid, you know, like if you get the quadrant, the 2x2, and the one that it just, my brain is just, it needs to simplify. But for me, I would say like on a vertical axis, I would say expectations. And on the horizontal axis, I would put love. And the way that I try to lead is to say, can I do it through high expectations and high love? And I feel like if you can get to that upper right quadrant where people know there are high expectations, there are, you're trying to pull, you're trying to develop them, help them learn, help them grow, push them. You have goals, but you do it in a way that they know you love them. You care about them. You're compassionate. You have patience. You have kindness. You love them. I think you get the very best out of people. I think you get the very best out of a company. Now, if you're in the lower left quadrant and you're low expectations, low love, and not very many of the companies like that because they're out of business. There probably are a lot, but they're gone. They're bankrupt, right? You don't survive low expectations, low love. Sadly, a lot of companies are in one of the other two quadrants. There might be high expectations, but it's low love, right? And a lot of people are like, oh, I hate this, the atmosphere. My boss, he's a taskmaster. Like he's selfish. He's in it for himself. It's like he's always, you know, yelling at me and they're not feeling loved or supported, or like, are they really investing in my career? Or you get the other side where it's low expectations and, hey, we never let anybody go and people aren't meeting the bar. And how come all the people sitting next to me aren't doing anything? That's frustrating too, when you're a high performer. And it's not really high love if you're not setting a high bar and helping people get over the bar. So I think for me, I would say it goes down to, how do you lead in a way that is high expectations and high love? Easier said than done, but if you can get to the upper right quadrant in that, I think you'll have a fantastic company. And it's not just business. I would say it's life. That's the quadrant you want to be in as a coach, as a teacher, as a parent, you know, spouse, whatever it might be.
People, if you're not taking notes, take notes, right? I could literally picture the graph as you were saying it. Like, I'm plotting it out in my mind, and it caused me to think, okay, where in my life do I have the balance of high expectations and high love? And it's interesting. Love is not a word that is used a lot in even corporate anything.
Certainly not in business.
I don't hear it a lot in business. How have you incorporated that formula and the word love in your relationships? Like, it feels like you don't shy away from that. You've embraced it.
I think you just want to be authentic. And you got to realize, I always tell my employees, business is about people. It's not that complicated. And guess what people need? They want to feel valued. They want to feel respected. They want to feel heard. They want to feel cared about, supported. They want to feel loved. It's okay to use the word love in business. I don't shy away from it. When you think about what it's encompassing, and if it's encompassing compassion and support, and I'm going to help you, and I'm going to mentor you and help you get to where you want to be, that's really powerful. And in business, you got to realize even the client, they want to feel, okay, am I cared about? Can you build trust? You know, Stephen M.R. Covey, Stephen Covey's son, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits son, Stephen M.R. Covey wrote a book called The Speed of Trust. And if you can build trust, everything goes faster in business. It's so much easier to get to a yes, right? You have trust dividends. And if you don't have trust, and if you're not showing care, you're not showing love, and they don't trust you, there's not honesty and integrity, guess what? There's a big trust tax. Mm-hmm. And so how do you get there? So I feel like love goes hand in hand with honesty and integrity, respect, teamwork, collaboration. It encompasses all of that, like at its very core. But those are the things that you might hear about it, like, okay, everything you learned in kindergarten really matters in business. The longer I was in business, the more I was absolutely convinced that those fundamental life truths are the most important aspects of business.
You're really causing me to think about, do I use the word love enough? And I love this concept. Now, listening to this, you're gonna be like, okay, I'm gonna use it more, but it gets hard. And so I'd love to hear about, like, when does this get hard in running a business? Like, when you're the CEO, where are the times where this formula really gets put to the test?
Well, I think you're dealing with humans, and people get frustrated and they get angry, and there's differences of opinion. And at Chatham, we dealt with lots of differences of opinion. Super smart people, lots of times trying to go in different ways, sometimes east and west at the same time, and that's difficult to do, right? And so it really does come back to like, do you really believe this deep down? Mm-hmm. It's so easy when someone else is frustrated to get frustrated right back. If they yell, to yell right back. But I'll tell you, one of the greatest mentors in my life was my dad. And I remember walking into his office as a kid, and one of the two quotes that he had framed on his wall was Proverbs 15, verse 1. It says, a soft answer turneth away wrath. And he was so good at putting that into practice. He was in construction management. And you think he's top in finance. They get angry and mad. I mean, when you're building stuff, like, you know, and it's hot and times are tough and things are behind schedule and, you know, there's a lot of frustrations and people come into his office just hot and yelling and mad. And my dad was phenomenal at taking a step back, listening and responding with kindness. And he told me, son, if you will put that into practice, a soft answer turneth away wrath. It is a truth and it works every time. And it was amazing. I tried it myself. I encourage everyone to give it a try. The next time someone's angry, don't respond to the anger. Listen to them. Actually think, you know what, this is my colleague, this is my friend, this is someone that's trying to do the right thing. Let me love them. Let me understand them. Let me seek first to understand, to quote Covey. And then let me respond with a soft answer, with kindness. And you will see the anger level go down, the frustration level go down. And what happens is you have a much healthier, much more productive conversation, as opposed to just yelling at each other.
And by the way, this is a principle that is great for work, home life, friends, community. I'm like, and intuitively, I'm thinking to myself, I know this. I need to be better at it. And the thing that I'm so impressed about this is just the sincerity that's coming through. I know you live this. And what, so I'm curious, because sometimes I think about some of the people that I've led before, and I'm literally plotting them out now, high expectations, high love. But what happens when somebody like literally is doing something dishonest or is breaking that trust where you're like, it's harder and harder to love, and the expectations, how do you lead through that when someone's not meeting the expectations? What does that look like for you?
That's a great question. And I will say with all of this, it doesn't mean you have to get run over. You can actually hold very firm to your values, to the standards, to your expectations without getting angry. You can be kind and you can be thoughtful, but you can also be direct and be clear. And I think sometimes giving someone really honest feedback, as long as it's done with kindness and with love, you can actually give more direct feedback, but it will resonate. It will stick with them. And so I think when you have situations like that, I wouldn't say it's less important, it's more important, right? Because if they know that you love them, if you respond with kindness, if you can help convince them that I am doing this because I love you, because I actually care about you and I care about your performance, but it doesn't mean you lower the bar and you help them try to meet it. And if they can't, sometimes you have to part ways. And listen, at Chatham, there were many times where we had to part ways, but you want to give them every opportunity to succeed. And the vast majority of the time, people will respond and they will succeed. People want to be successful. They want to meet a high bar. No one wants to say, hey, you know what? I want to get over a really low bar in life. The vast majority of people want to clear it. But if they know that, you know what? Spencer cares about me. He actually wants to help me clear a high bar. It's the best way to go about it. And then if they're being dishonest, if you can't trust them, that's a hard thing to rebuild. You can love someone and not trust them. And I think that's an important point too. And you don't have to necessarily trust someone. Like, that's going to be earned, but you can always love them and help them. And sometimes it might not be right that they stay with the company. Maybe they need to move on. It doesn't mean you don't love them, but trust is something that you build over time.
Okay. So I've one observation and one question. An observation, I've yet to see a coaching model that has in it kindness and love. And I'm now rethinking the model that I'm working on a big project. I'm like, wait a minute. We need to put kindness and love in this coaching model, because to your point, that's incredibly powerful. And then you just said something, you don't have to trust someone to love them.
Right.
That's way easier said than done. How do I love somebody if I don't trust them and I barely know them? Clark Maxwell, as a CEO, how do you do that?
I agree. Easier said than done. But I think in business, if you look at them, you know, as people just like you, these are people that have families that, you know, have gotten to where they are in life because they care. They have things that they care about. Sometimes I try to look at them as not so different than me. You know, I do think some of it is part of my worldview, that I believe that we are all sons and daughters of God. And lots of times that helps to say, you know what, God loves them. And this is my brother and my sister. And I do it even like when someone like road rage is like, can be hard for me, right? Like someone honks, you're like, oh, and sometimes I have to remember that's my brother or that's my sister, but just kind of put them in a context of, you know what? I don't know what's stressing them out that day. I don't know if they're going through something really hard. Maybe it's a health issue. Maybe they're stressed out with finances. Maybe they have just had, you know, a horrible event happen in their life. And I don't know. So I'm going to assume the best. You know, I love Scott O'Neill just wrote a book, you know, Be Where Your Feet Are, about being present. So good. One of the things he really points out is assume positive intent. And I would say, particularly in those situations when it's the most difficult, you have to try to assume positive intent. And if you will, it goes better because it's so easy to judge someone else by their behaviors, judge yourself by your intentions. But we do it all the time. We're so quick to judge and be negative. But I think if we assume positive intent and give them the benefit of the doubt, it goes a long way.
I love the shout out to Scott O'Neill. We actually talked about that book. As the CEO of Chatham Financial, you've been able to, I think, walk a line that so many people struggle with, right? Like, you're not afraid to talk about love, about God. And where some people are so taboo about that, you found a way in a very non-threatening, non-political way to say, this is who I am. And regardless of the religion, right? It doesn't matter whether, you know, the name of the religion, you've transcended it beyond title or names to say, no, guys, this is how we act.
Right.
How does that happen in today's world? And like you said, you do this in every big organization around the world. So it's not like we're saying, oh, you've only done it here. You've literally done it everywhere.
You know, I think a lot of it goes back to being authentic. I think I realized early on, I'm going to be a really bad anybody other than Clark Maxwell. Like, I would be a horrible Spencer Holt or, you know, name the person. But I'm only going to be a good Clark Maxwell. And so I think you do have to be authentic. I think sometimes we fear too much that it's okay to share like who we are authentically. I think we worry so much about offending, but as long as we are respectful and kind and compassionate and it's done for the right reasons, I am always amazed at how people are not offended.
Well, and how long were you CEO then?
3 years.
Okay, in 3 years. And then prior to that, you were COO.
And about so 5.5 years.
And what's the growth that's happened at Chatham Financial over that time, approximately?
So we grew from about just over 60 million in revenue to 230 million last year. So
wow,
about 4X. Yeah.
So, and the reason why I wanted to bring that up, by the way, the count, I'm like, I knew you'd know, right? You're like, the counting nerd is going to know that. That's the power of authentic leadership. You owning true to your formula of high expectations, high love. And then the ripple effect is this organization that has truly 4X growth, 60 million to over 200 million. That's a ton of exponential growth that is, you know, and they always say, like, look, culture and leadership starts at top and is trickle down. It's worked.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's being there, being part of it, it's collaborating, being a team. That's maybe the one other thing I would say. I've worked in organizations where it felt very competitive. One person, even like in some of the organizations I've worked in, you were force ranked,
yeah,
like with your class. And so it was really hard to not feel competitive with them. I think creating, you know, having individual goals, but collaborating and saying we're a team, and having individual goals, but team goals, company goals, and working together makes such a big difference. And then if you are a leader at that company, doing it with them. If you're saying, hey, we're trying to cut expenses, so fly coach, then don't go fly first class, fly coach. If you're saying we're going to work Monday through Friday because it builds the culture, whatever you decide, you need to work Monday through Friday. Don't like have a different set of rules for everybody else and yourself. And I think that's really important. But I tried to say, hey, whatever the rules are going to be, I'm going to play by those exact same rules. And then when you're working together, it's powerful when you're facing adversity, when you're facing storms. You know, I love this story. There was this cowboy on the plains of Wyoming, and he said the greatest lesson I ever learned on the plains was the Hereford cows and the way they acted when a storm came. He said, in Wyoming, it gets like way below zero. You get hail and snow and these freezing winds, and cattle of almost every herd, they would turn their back to the wind, and the wind would blow them mile after mile until they'd hit the boundary fence and die by the scores. But he said the Hereford cows were different. They would line up shoulder to shoulder, head down, and face the storm head on. And he said after the storm, the Hereford cows were always alive and well. It's the greatest lesson I ever learned on the plains. And I love that imagery. It's the same way in business. Like, are we shoulder to shoulder, head down, facing the adversity of the storms head on? And I think to the extent we do that in business, and you're one of the herd, right? Shoulder to shoulder with them, head down, facing the storm, facing the adversity, you're going to survive. And I love that imagery of which herd of cattle died by the scores and which one were always alive and well. Actually, not different than business either. We're not that different than cows, Spencer.
I'm a Hereford cow.
If you're going to be a cow, be a Hereford cow.
That imagery is so powerful. And I think what you've just described is why some people will run through the wall through a leader, is because that leader, like you said, they get shoulder to shoulder with them. You would not be able to tell a difference of who that is. And I think that's the power of, you know, leader, servant-based leadership, or leaders that live what they say and they walk the walk. And so I love that. Clark, we clearly have to have you on for another episode. This is not a long enough episode. I'd love to talk more about culture and employee-owned company, what you've done for that. But because we're going to close, your next chapter, I think this literally kind of just, I think, helps people understand your ability to live into your values and be authentic. Your next, you've just stepped down from CEO. So you weren't fired. You weren't asked to leave. You weren't given a package. You voluntarily said, I'm doing something different. Just, if you would, share what that is and why you've decided to literally stop your job and not get paid for the next 3 years.
So my wife and I were recently called to serve as mission leaders for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for 3 years in the Idaho-Boise mission. And we will work with about 200 full-time missionaries, mostly 18, 19, 20-year-olds, sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ with the world. And I look at the world today, and I think there has never been a greater need for peace, for a gospel of love, when we see so much of confusion and contention, and the ability to work with young people. I got to say, I have a soft place in my heart for 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds, and I'm sure a lot can go wrong when you're working with 200, and we'll work with about 500 over that three-year period. But this opportunity to hopefully give back and make a difference, I feel like God has blessed our lives so much in so many ways. So it's not something we applied for, but when we were asked to, we quickly said, in a heartbeat, we would drop everything and go serve. Just super excited to hopefully make a difference in the world and uplift and bring people hope and bring people love and bring people closer to God and strengthen families and strengthen communities.
I have no doubt you're going to make a difference. Those 18 to 21-year-old boys and girls, young men, young women, are going to be so lucky. And it is an example of, here's a leader that some would argue you're still in your peak earning years of your career.
For sure.
You've decided that you are placing an experience, and almost you're building future generations of leaders and placing a legacy of love and high expectations over money is absolutely incredible.
We can't wait.
Oh my gosh. Okay. One last question, if you would, Clark Maxwell. Name of the podcast, Small Things Make a Big Difference. What is one small leadership habit that you do on a consistent basis that makes a big difference in the many different lives that you interact with?
You know, I think I would say on a given day, it's spending a little time with people. I know that sounds crazy, but it's so easy to just say, I've got this really long list of to-dos. I'm going to go hit it and just jump right in. I've got this report, this presentation. spending a few minutes to like walk around and just connect and just say, how was your week? And how is your son? And I know you're sick, or your daughter had COVID. How's she doing? You have to somehow connect with people at that level. And then I feel like they will walk over hot coals for you once they know you care. It makes such a difference, but it's so hard because we're so busy, but just, it's a small thing, but just spending, even if it's 30 seconds, 45 seconds, 1 minute with different people and connecting, I think it makes a huge difference.
Oh my gosh. Clark,
small thing, but
it's a small thing that makes a big difference that I think lives into your formula of how you lead with love and high expectation. It's such a great, that access is so powerful. You are going to be amazing. Best of luck in the future. We're going to have you on for episode 2. I want to do like a, maybe either mid mission or post around what lessons have you learned hanging out with 18 to 21 year olds over the next 2-3 years.
I would love it. I'm sure they will teach me a lot, a great deal over the next 3 years. So that sounds great.
I hope you enjoyed this week's session of Small Things Make a Big Difference. If you had, please rate this, like it, share it with somebody that you think should listen to it. For me, I love the insight that Clark Maxwell shares around high expectations on one axis and high love on the other, and how that makes up a big part of his leadership equation. And that has been part of his, not only, you know, professional life as a CEO of a, you know, a major consulting organization, but in every other aspect that he lives and leaves in. I can't help but think about the Hereford story and how as leaders, especially during times of challenge and storm, that instead of staying in the back or trying to direct from far away, that you are shoulder to shoulder with your people. And that as you do that together, you come out of that storm completely unified and together. And so my hope is each one of you will have taken something that you can apply, one small thing from this podcast and the insight from Clark that you can take that will make a big difference in your own life and the lives of the many people you interact with. Have an amazing week.